From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, the world's largest mind over matter experiment with Lynn McTaggart, and also the work called The Bond. Get ready for that. Well, here's what's happening. I'm sure you've seen the news about what happened in the Midwest and part of the South. Unbelievable. A devastating storm that spawned tornadoes, flash floods, and hail as big as softballs has claimed now at least 45 lives across the United States while roaring through the South and gaining steam in North Carolina and Virginia. Emergency crews search for victims in hard-hit swaths of North Carolina where 62 tornadoes were reported, from the worst spring storm in two decades to hit the state. Here's Mitch Batras, earthchangesmedia.com. Mitch, what the heck is going on with the planet?
Well, let's say that it has to do with the sun, and that fuels extreme weather. In other words, April and May in particular, is tornado season. However, when solar events are added to that equation, it fuels whatever season we're in. For example, if it was September, it would be hurricanes. So that is really what's going on. This was 15 states, a rampage for over 3 days. Now, it just so happens to correlate exactly with some solar activity that occurred just a few days earlier, and it takes about 48 hours before it hits Earth. It was an M1 class flare, along with some C-class flares and a coronal hole. All that hit Earth, and the coronal hole in particular was Earth, specifically Earth-directed. All that hit about the time that the tornadoes and twisters, including straight-line winds. A lot of people don't know about these straight-line winds and microbursts. They mimic tornadoes. Often it's described as a tornado without a funnel. Now, obviously, there were several funnels that occurred. In fact, I heard as many as
62.
What was a total out of all the 15 states?
Just in North Carolina, 62.
Oh, that's just in North Carolina. I think it was well over 100 all the 15 states. This is really horrendous.
Mitch, how does a solar flare affect our weather, though?
Well, it goes like this in the most simplest terms. When the sun explodes, whether it be a coronal mass ejection, a solar flare, or a coronal hole, it sends these charged particles, a cloud of plasma, if you will, racing in whatever direction it's facing. If it happens to be Earth-directed, it hits the Earth's magnetic field. The magnetic field warps around the Earth. It's like a protector, kind of the shape of an egg. And so it kind of bounces most all the charged particles away. But those that come through hit our ionosphere. When it hits the ionosphere, it has an effect on the jet stream. When it hits the jet stream, that has a causal effect on ocean currents. You mix all that together, and you have extreme weather. Now, that's why I say it exacerbates, whether it's hurricane season or tornado season or what have you, and it makes it worse. Now, I have gone public, George, and said that, and I kind of regret I used the strong words, but I think from here through 2012 and just beyond, I think we're going to see events without reprieve, and I base that on the solar cycle.
Well, I think you're right, Mitch. I really do. Mitch's website, by the way, earthchangesmedia.com. My, oh my, what do the Mayans know? Readings from robots that entered two crippled buildings at Japan's tsunami-flooded nuclear plant for the first time in more than a month revealed a harsh environment still too radioactive for even workers to enter. Officials said the radiation data from Unit 1 and Unit 3 at the tsunami-flooded Fukushima plant collected by U.S.-made robots, do not alter plans, though, for stabilizing the complex by year's end. Economists say the U.S. economy is gaining strength despite political unrest in North America, and North Africa, rather, and the Middle East, and last month's devastating earthquake and tsunami in Japan. A survey from the National Association for Business Economics finds that economists are hopeful that the broader economy is improving. Meanwhile, stocks plunged a bit on U.S. debt outlook. Here's registered investment advisor Mitch Shedlock with us. Mitch, It's not over yet, is it?
No, I don't think it's over yet. And, you know, George, I have to be honest. You know, I said in January, and I said it on your show, that this would be the year that something's mattered. Well, so far, not much has mattered. I think it's just a question of when, though. And I'm looking at this as denial in Greece here. A Greek newspaper reported today that Greece was in talks with the IMF about Greek restructuring. And the prime minister came on and said, this is not an issue we're discussing. And I'm looking at this, and my God, how can anyone say that? Greek yields, two-year debt yields, 20%, 20.34%. And they're saying, we're not discussing this. Oh, my God. I know that's a lie. But here's something that the media is not saying. Why is the Prime Minister of Greece saying this? Because the Greek pension plans are loaded to the hilt with Greek debt. If they download this debt, that's a haircut, 20, 30, 40%. What is it? You know, I don't know. I know it's going to happen, but they're saying it's not going to, because look at what that will do to the public pension plans in Greece. Not if, but when they download this. The market says it's going to happen. The officials deny it. You know, and I know, they're lying.
And you know what? What could happen here, Mitch?
Exactly. And we all think that this can't happen here. Well, of course it could. The S&P downgraded U.S. debt today, or put it on a negative watch, excuse me. And, you know, I don't want to overplay this or underplay it, but actually, you know, who's really listening to the S&P? These guys blew it. The S&P, Moody's, and Fitch all were way behind the curve in the housing crisis. You know, rating stuff AAA that was really junk. And now they're finally coming out and saying, well, you know what? We're going to put the U.S. on negative watch. Well, I think they're irrelevant. They're behind the curve. You know, and I know, they're lying.
Well, we're going to see what happens this year. Ms. Shedlock, our registered investment advisor. Zahi Hawass, head of the Egypt's Antiquities, in deep trouble. As a matter of fact, he's on his way to jail. The Minister of State for Antiquities Affairs, Zahi Hawass, has now been sentenced to 1 year in jail for refusing to fulfill a court ruling over a land dispute. The Egyptian criminal court also said that Hawass must be relieved of his governmental duties and ordered him to pay a penalty. This is all a battle over a land dispute when somebody claims he owned it. Hawass says, no, there's monuments on it. We own it. He lost. He's going to jail. He's been on the program before. Tomorrow night, Robert Bival, Egyptologist, joins us. We'll talk about Zahi Hawass and some other issues. If you go to coasttocoastam.com, take a look at some of the most incredible pictures NASA has ever released. They posted thousands of incredible space images on the Internet. And I'm going to tell you something. The wonders of space, absolutely gorgeous. Here's space historian Robert Zimmerman with us. Rob, these are incredible pictures.
Yes, this is the result of a really super-duper mission that was launched in 2009, the WISE infrared telescope. And it scanned the sky for about 14 months. And looking in the infrared, which is heat, it allows them to look through dust. And you can look at galaxies, and you can see things like asteroids and comets that normally would not be visible because you're not looking at the light that they emit, which is not much. You're looking at the heat where they emit, which you can detect. And WISE detected 20 comets and 33,000 asteroids that were not known before. The data has now, for the first 60% of the mission, has now been released to the public on the web. You can go to the website. In fact, I posted on my own website, Behind the Black, links to it where you can go and you can explore all this data. You can not only explore it, George, you can actually research. You pick an object you'd like to get a close look at, you can go look at it. You can actually do your own research and see such incredible images of galaxies.
It's amazing. And Robert, we're going to do a complete show with you because I want to ask you how this was all done.
Okay.
You know where I'm headed.
Well, the thing that I like about WISE is that it finds and has found, and in its data are hidden, which can be found, asteroids that potentially could even impact the Earth. That's the thing that's most exciting to me. And the comets. It found a lot of comets, but in that database that's now available on the web, there are other things not yet found that over the next few years, astronomers are going to be digging in to try to find. But the truth is, amateurs can do it as well. It's really true. You and your own home can do it if you want.
It's the marvels of the universe. And go take a look at coasttocoastam.com. Something is happening. Some time ago on Dark Mission, the best-selling book by Richard C. Hoagland and Mike Barra, they cited a document that basically talked about that JFK, John F. Kennedy, may have been killed because of his interest in UFOs, extraterrestrials. Listen to this document just uncovered. An uncovered letter written by John F. Kennedy to the head of the CIA shows that the president demanded to be shown highly confidential documents about UFOs 10 days before his assassination. The secret memo is one of two letters written by JFK asking for information about the paranormal on November 12, 1963. He was killed on November 22, 1963, which have now been released by the CIA for the first time. Author William Lester said the CIA released the documents to him under the Freedom of Information Act after he made a request while researching his new book, A Celebration of Freedom. The president's interest in UFOs shortly before his death is likely to fuel all kinds of theories about his assassination. And another bizarre story released when the FBI revealed some of their records. Cows were sacrificed by aliens, sending the White House into a panic, according to declassified FBI files. It is claiming that more than 8,000 cows were abducted, possibly by UFOs, before they were mutilated and thrown back to Earth over the southern United States during the 1970s. The memo is one of thousands of previously unreleased classified documents that the Bureau has made public in the resource called The Vault. Can you believe that? It's amazing. And reports of sleeping air traffic controllers highlight a long-known and often ignored hazard. Workers on night shifts can have trouble concentrating and even staying awake. Are you one of them? Up next, Dennis Manis joins us. We're going to talk about this on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Dr. Dennis Manis, PhD, has also developed therapeutic software with protocols utilizing the discoveries in brainwave therapy, neurofeedback, biofeedback, neuroplasticity for treatment and a clinical practice. These protocols have been successful in improving or resolving symptoms of various sleep disorders. He's with us this hour as we talk about a very interesting story that odd work schedules pose risk to health. And here's Dr. Manis. Dennis, how are you?
Yeah, I am doing fantastic, George. Thanks for the invite.
My pleasure, too. Now, tell me about these odd work schedules. Why does it affect people?
Well, first of all, our brain develops a homeostasis based upon the way that we have been living our lives. I can look at your brain by placing electrodes in various parts of your brain. I can see the electrical activity of what's going on. And through other types of scans, we are able to see the effect of changes in your schedule or even changes in your diet, changes in your routine, and how it affects your daily function. When we see these traffic controllers falling asleep, that's not unlike somebody falling to sleep next to you at a board meeting or at a...
or a vice president listening to a presidential speech.
Right, that's happened. And it's highly embarrassing. But, you know, there's so many things that we can do to correct it. And that's the one thing that we do here is we develop. We are a research center, and we work with a number of doctors in various parts of the country to help help find remedies, help find ways and means. One of our key areas is sleep. And when we have someone who is having difficulties with sleep, we look at the brain's homeostasis, the cycles that the person is currently in. Then we look at the person's work schedule. We look at the person's daily routines, mm-hmm. everything they put in their mouth. What are they doing when they're supposed to be home asleep? And one of the toughest things to do for someone that's working a night shift or even a graveyard shift is to work at night and then come home and the family is awake during the day. And the person who's working the night shift should be getting some rest or some sleep. There's a lot of distractions at the house. You want to do things with the family. You want to go to dinner. You want to enjoy the kids. But then now it's time to go back to work. You haven't really had that much rest. So changing into that cycle can sometimes be challenging. So when you first step into a new cycle, there is a learning curve. And with that learning curve comes a discipline, and you need to be disciplined in order to handle it.
And Dennis, studies show that 30 to 50% of night shift workers say that they do fall asleep at least once a week on the job.
That's correct. And if you follow that study even further, you'll find how many of them are dozing while they're on the street with you and me. And studies show that people who are sleep deprived are a safe driver to someone who is legally intoxicated. So those studies, if you carry them a step further, okay, if you're driving tired and in that test you show that your driving is no better than someone who is legally intoxicated, now you go to the job. How are you performing even when you are awake on the job? Are you able to keep control?
You can't.
No, you can't. And that's the sorry state that that we have to teach people how to entrain their brains to react different. And we have to teach people to come into a new behavior.
Could one of the reasons, Dennis, that people who work nights fall asleep on the job is because they wake up early and they want to take advantage of the daytime crowd, and they just can't stay up that long?
That is a problem. I have a very good friend down here who is a anchor man on a key news show, and he has to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Well, all of us buddies work daytime jobs. He works that tough shift where he has to get up at 3 a.m., show up in the newsroom, start collecting news data, and prepare for his morning news show. Now, this gentleman is extremely disciplined, and, you know, he'll have the nice dinner. He'll check out and say, guys, I've got to get up at 3, and I'll see you guys another day. But not everybody can carry that same discipline. That's why this gentleman is successful on his job and is able to be so alert. But there are things that you can do when you are tired that you can bring yourself back to focus. So if you're sitting in the classroom or the boardroom, there are easy exercises that you can do that are not really noticeable that will help change your brain's state of alertness. Now, keep in mind your brain is being fed by a number of divisions or a number of areas within the brain. Everything in your brain is relational. If a part of your brain is tired and it's trying to send that signal, let's say from the posterior parietal to the right prefrontal lobe, in other words, it's a command saying you need to do this next. If you are tired, that prefrontal lobe is not going to be able to receive that message with the timing necessary in order to complete that thought as quickly as it should be completed. If I'm working with a professional athlete, I want them to have a neuromuscular response to thought within 15/100ths of a second. Now, that's pretty fast. My NASCAR driver, I want him to have a neuromuscular response to thought in 11/100ths of a second. I want their visual range expanded so that they can take in more information. And I want them to be able to process that information to the correct areas of the brain rapidly so they can make those snap decisions. Because if they don't have that ability to move fast or get out of the way of the ball or to get off the line in time, they could get hurt.
Absolutely. Dennis, stay with us. We're going to take some phone calls with you when we come back with our special guest, Dennis Manis, PhD. We're talking about sleep and your health. Those of you who, if you want to admit it, have fallen asleep on the job, check in with us on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Lynn McTaggart joins us. We'll talk about the connection between the space between us. It's called the bond. Fascinating story. And when we come back with Dr. Dennis Manis, we're going to be talking about sleep and why it's so important and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, with Dr. Dennis Manis, we'll take your calls in just a second. Dennis, I've got a sharp memory. I really do. But I find that when I get really tired, I'm not as sharp as I normally am. How come?
Reason why on that one, George, is because your brain requires a certain amount of energy in order to do the processing. It's like putting cheap gas in your tank and letting your car run down and not keeping it tuned. Again, everything in the brain is relational. And when you go to process a thought, there are around four primary areas of the brain that has to be captivated or information collected from and sent to a area for assimilation and putting that information together. When you are tired, when you are run down, you are processing slower than what you should be processing. I have a little game I'll send you, George, and I play this game every time I go to do a talk show.
Okay.
What it does is it challenges me to think faster, process faster, and it really helps me stay on my game. I know that I need to have my personal thoughts processing around 22 to 2100ths of a second. And this game, what you would do is it'll tell you if you're processing too slow. And then you continue to challenge yourself until you move that time up. Now, the best thing you can do for yourself, if you need a real quick charge, is you can take some of the vitamin B12 drops, spray. But it's safe. It's easy.
Uh-huh.
And then do this little game. As a matter of fact, I'll share that game with your listeners if they want to send me an email. I'll send them some information on that, okay?
Super. Give us your email address.
Yeah, you want to send that. Actually, the best place to send that for the game is send that to info@brainteek.org. Okay, so that's brain, brainteek.org. So it's
all right, we'll post that for you. Let's take some phone calls. We'll go to Jerry in Anaheim, California. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hi, I work a graveyard shift, and I've been working at this place I'm working for 2 years, and it seems like after the first year, I took a vacation for a week. I came back, and I've been dozing off, like, a whole lot more. Like, I used to doze off every once in a while, like, just before I was going to get off.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I stayed awake all night.
Yeah.
And now, I came back from vacation for the past year, I've been dozing off.
How was your sleep cycles?
Sometimes I get off work, I go exercise. Sometimes I stay up a little bit too late, and I might get 5, 6 hours. Every once in a while, I might only get 2 or 3. But even on days where I sleep, mm-hmm. and I get a good 8 hours of sleep, I'll come to work and I'll get a little sleepier.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Two questions. Number one question is your sleep cycle, the time that you go to bed, time you get up, is that compatible with your schedule before you went on vacation?
I think I've done a little bit of changing. Maybe sometimes I've started exercising in the morning after I get off work. I might have gone to exercise before work. Mm-hmm. Before vacation. Do you think the exercising makes a difference whether I go after work or before work?
What time do you get to bed before vacation and after vacation?
Before vacation, I might have gone to bed 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. Then I might have gotten up at about 3 or 4 and then gone to exercise.
Okay. Now, when you exercise, your body is beginning to get very activated. The muscles are getting a good workout, and your body is getting a lot of endorphins, kind of like the runner's high. And you feel great when you finish the exercise. Now, if you go home and then you go to bed, it's going to take your body longer to adjust and get to sleep. Does that make sense?
Well, and here's one of the problems too, Dennis. For example, mm-hmm. in the Midwest, I get off the air at 4 o'clock in the morning, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
By the time I get home and get to sleep, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. The morning people wake you up.
Yeah.
You know, they're cutting their grass. They're doing mm-hmm. all these things. It's difficult for someone who works at night to sleep a normal pattern.
Right. And what you need to do is make your bedroom conducive to sleep and make the adjustments for the noise. Now, that might mean putting a little extra soundproofing around the windows. That might mean putting a shade over the windows so you can have a darker area. You want to adjust your room temperature so that you are comfortable, so you're cozy. Not too hot, not too cool. You want it to be nice and cozy.
Shut that cell phone off.
Turn off that cell phone. Matter of fact, move the house phone into another room so the house phone doesn't disturb you either. Next is, as far as staying awake on the job, staying alert on the job, you want your office or the area that you are working on or working in to be as conducive to being awake as possible. Now, there are certain things that that we can all use, whether you're a traffic controller or whether you're working on that night shift, and that is check out the lighting. Because the lighting, certain wattage emits a frequency, and that certain frequency can be disturbing to the signals that your brain is trying to process.
Huh.
So if you've got a 60-watt bulb above your head, all those fluorescent lights, they used to produce a little bit of a buzz. They're getting much better at that now, and there are good ergonomic bulbs that you can purchase that do a much better job and are not quite as interfering with the brain. Having some plant life around you, having the correct amount of lighting around you, and the way you sit at your desk is important, because if you are slumped over your desk, you're not getting the proper oxygen to the brain. Without proper oxygen to the brain, you're going to tire faster. You want to take periodic breaks, even if it's just to get up and walk to the water cooler and get a drink of water and walk back to your desk. Your brain has optimum performance in about 10 to 12 minute burst. And that's when you want to sit back, stretch, kick them legs out in front of you, and tighten the muscles, and then relax the body and sit up. When you're working, don't slump over the desk. Watch your posture, because if you're slumping over the desk, you're putting more pressure on your neck, on your shoulders, and on your back. You're limiting the air supply going to your head, and therefore it's going to be tougher for the brain to do its job optimally.
Okay? Interesting. Let's go to Ben in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Ben, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I started listening to your program probably about 15 years ago. I went to work for a railroad, and I'm a conductor on the trains, and there's a lot of scary experiences we've had out there with fatigue. The federal law, you can only work 12 hours, but in between that, you only need 8 hours rest, off time.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you get off the train, finish your paperwork, drive home, get cleaned up, get something to eat, you might only be sleeping 4 or 5 hours before the phone could ring and you got to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And one time really stands out. We were on a long stretch of sort of empty track, just out in the middle of the woods, cruising for miles, no towns. And the engineer shut the headlights off just to rest his eyes because they're really bright at night. And I was very tired. I was dozing off. And I must have fallen asleep. I woke up, and we were probably 10 miles further than I remember. The engineer was sound asleep. We had gone through a town, over crossings, unprotected crossings, you know, with no lights, no guard arms, with no headlights, no oscillating ditch lights, no bell, no horn, just cruising 40 miles an hour through this town with absolutely, you know, fully sound asleep.
Fully asleep.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I had a friend that was working with me. He took a job as a dispatcher. One time I happened to be in the town where the dispatch center was located. And this is a high-tech computerized system. And I went up to the tower, got off the train, walked up there just to say hello. And I asked how he was doing, and he seemed just stressed. Seemed like a wreck. And I asked him how he was doing, how things are going with the new job. And he just laughed. And he said, if you knew what went on in here, you wouldn't be out there.
Wow.
That's scary. Yeah. What about, and thanks for the call, Ben. What about pilots, Dennis? We've heard of the air traffic controllers falling asleep.
Right.
What if both pilots fall asleep? How would we ever know?
We wouldn't unless the tower tries to call them or if they get an alert and nobody wakes up.
My God.
We have a Top Gun pilot that comes in to see us about once a year for a tune-up. We have a protocol that we have developed for people who fly or for people who cross time zones a lot. And it so far has been very successful on knocking out jet lag. It's been very successful at keeping you awake. Now, a couple of exercises that I'd like to offer this gentleman and any traffic controller or any pilot.
Sure.
When you become fatigued, there's certain things that you can do to oxygenate the brain and bring quick energy. People will usually reach, and especially in the campuses, you'll see kids who get tired. They'll reach for a soda, a candy bar, things like that for the quick energy. But just as they have the quick energy, you have the quick downer. So what you need is you need something that's going to give you the quick energy and allow you to move forward. And that can all be done with breathing and with the brain and staying properly hydrated, drinking a lot of water. And again, I'm not selling vitamin B12, but I mean taking the vitamin B12, that's a safe natural energy that you can take. Now, what I'd like for you to do is, this is a real quick, simple exercise. Matter of fact, I did it with one of your producers earlier today. We knocked out a headache in probably about 30 seconds. I don't know if she told you about it or not. But,
yeah, I know who that was.
Okay. Now, what we want to do is I want you to become aware of your brain, okay? You're feeling fatigued. You're not processing as quickly as you want to or as quickly as you probably should. And these guys don't fall asleep because they're not interested or that they don't care. A fatigue factor sits in. And when you multiply that fatigue factor with stress, you're setting up for a potential problem.
Sure.
Now, what I want you to do is I want you to take your finger and place it on your forehead, okay? And the only reason why you're going to place your finger there is I want you to forget all other thoughts. I just want you to take your full attention to the touch on your forehead. Now, if you're having a hard time feeling that touch because the body temperature is the same on your fingers on your forehead, you might have a difficulty maintaining that touch, so you might just want to tap lightly on your forehead. Now, what you want to do is you want to bring all your attention right there to the front. And as you do, you want to take a nice, deep breath. What you're doing is you are going to totally relax every fiber in your body. You just want to bring the muscles to a quick state of relaxation. Take a few good, deep breaths. Take them in from the diaphragm and have your attention focused on that touch or even a tapping on your forehead. Now, what's going to happen is it's going to interfere with your stress patterns. When it interferes with your stress patterns and you are breathing deep, you are bringing fresh oxygen into the brain. If you got some water close by, good deal. Drink that water. If it's clustered water, that's wonderful. If it's good pure stream water, that's great. But drink some water. Your body needs the hydration. Now, what you're going to find is that you're focused and you've got some quick energy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, that one little quick exercise will keep you awake for a bit. Now, Once you are in a safe zone where you can take a little break, get up and walk around, walk over to the water cooler, get a nice big drink, stretch, breathe deep. And even if you can do some bends, you know, just grab the back of the chair, bend at the knees, bring your body back up. What you're doing is you're stretching the muscles. You're getting oxygen into the muscles. Now, if you're sitting behind a desk and you don't have the opportunity to get up, what you can do is stretch your legs, stretch your body as much as you possibly can. And by bringing your attention to that spot on your forehead, breathing deep, getting some good oxygen, sitting up at your desk, these are all quick tips, and we have dozens of those quick tips on our website. And if anyone, and George, I'll throw this out there, if anyone wants to send me an email at info@braintech.org, I'll send them some information on some things they can do to keep their brain oxygenated and to keep them alert and awake while they're working their way through their day.
Dennis, why do we yawn? Is that the body's way of trying to get more oxygen into it?
Yes, it is. That's one of the ways it warns you. Some people will feel fatigued, but one of the best things you can do is follow your body's lead. Get that good yawn. And when you start yawning, reach for some water.
Yep. All right, let's go to Austin, Texas. Hey, Jimmy, go ahead. Jimmy?
Yes, I'm here, George. How are you?
There you go. Thought you fell asleep on me for a moment, Jimmy.
Well, we had a little break in the communication. Anyways, your guest pretty much answered all my questions, but it brought me to a question that I have about some of my friends. I'm a Iraq War veteran, and some of my friends have PTSD and they have trouble sleeping. The VA has put them on a lot of meds. Is there a way that they can get past the meds and maybe are there some exercises they can do to sleep better? Because a lot of them aren't sleeping.
Yes, there is, and that's an excellent question. We have worked with quite a number of veterans who have come back from Iraq and Afghanistan. Some of them have deep PTSD and emotional issues. And what we do is we have a technique that will separate the emotion from the experience. And it's just through sending particular signals into the brain to help remove the trauma from the main highway of the brain. Now, that's oversimplifying a very complex situation. But when you... The gentlemen and the ladies that we've worked with relax. All of a sudden, these thoughts start coming back, and the amygdala gets very activated. The amygdala is the area of the brain that some people call it a fear center, but it's
the reptilian portion, we call it. Is it?
I'm sorry?
The reptilian portion of the brain.
Actually, it's a little bit further up, but that is also an extremely important area when it comes to stress and PTSD. Post-traumatic stress disorder, you're dealing with a trauma situation, and you're absolutely correct because, you see, everything in the brain is relational. And when the amygdala is sending out a signal of stress, that signal, and many of the vets that we've worked with, or the boys and girls coming back from the Middle East, their basal ganglia is also extremely active, and the basal ganglia's close proximity to the frontal lobes cause them to have constant thoughts or a constant stress. Even when they are at ease, the stress remains. So what we do is we relax that stress response. What we do is we relax the overfiring of the amygdala, and now we go back by that brainstem area. If you come toward the top of the brainstem and back just a little bit, there's a posterior parietal complex which receives.
Well, it's an incredible story, Dennis, and your website is well worthy of everybody going to, especially to take that very special test. We've got a link at coasttocoastam.com. And when we come back, Lynn McTaggart joins me as we talk about the bond.